Welcome to Cherished Women with Kimberly Walton. With a look into issues facing today's Christian women, let's be honest, with all the things coming at us, it's easy to become inundated with life's messiness. As a wife, mother, founder of Cherished Wives International, and a marriage mentor, Kimberly fully understands how difficult it can be for a woman to balance work, life, home, and love. Today, she'll help you navigate life's challenges so you may thrive in life, love, and marriage. Now, here's Kimberly Walton with a topic on being cherished.
Welcome. So today we have a special guest on the show. We have marriage and family therapist Joel Walton with us. Joel is in private practice in the area, and before that, he was a staff counselor at Bayside Church for over 3 years. Joel has a master's degree in clinical counseling and a master's degree also in biblical counseling, so he knows his stuff. Joel is here today as a marriage and family therapist to talk to us about the first Monday in January. And this first Monday in January for marriage and family therapist is, well, it's kind of famous, or maybe we should say infamous, because that's probably more accurate. It's called Divorce Monday. So welcome, Joel. We are so happy to have you here, and I am eager to learn about Divorce Monday. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Kimberly, and thanks so much for having me here with you today. It's great.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here, and we're, again, really looking forward to this information that you're going to share today about Divorce Monday and marriages and discernment counseling, and it's going to be an interesting topic, so
yes, it is.
Stay tuned. So, Joel, let's jump into this. Let's jump into it.
Sure.
What is Divorce Monday all about?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Divorce Monday is really the first Monday of the new year where people historically come in and file for divorce. And what's interesting is that people oftentimes will wait till after the holidays because they don't want to wreck the holidays with an announcement like something like that. And so it just seems to be a real rush at the beginning of the year, primarily because of the people having New Year's resolutions and things that kind of, I think, move them to want to make a change.
Right. Well, and I can see where people wouldn't want to maybe make that announcement for the holidays. They're going to get through Thanksgiving and
right.
Christmas and say, this is our last one, and maybe even try to make it extra special because they know it's their last one.
Exactly.
Now, something you were telling me before on this topic is that this amount of people that go in on this Monday to see attorneys, that the amount of people filing for divorce is like one-third higher than normal. This is a significant date for people to come in. And it's such a large difference in the amount of people filing that it, I mean, it's got its own name, and attorneys gear up for this because
right.
it's so dramatic.
Yeah, they actually, some attorneys are actually hiring people at this time of the year. It's also the other time of the year that there's a big increase is around August, just before kids go back to school. That's another time. But this is probably just as equally as large of a time.
Right. And so you mentioned something, and I want to make sure that we don't go past that too much. But you mentioned that sometimes this is related to the idea that people are, they've got a resolution. They're
yep.
going to, next
exactly.
year, I'm gonna make changes, or I'm going to dump my mate, or whatever it is. So, you know, that's an interesting thing because, you know, we believe, I know you and I both, we believe in marriages and saving them if it's at all possible. So let me ask you a question. Do you think that every marriage can or maybe should be saved?
Well, you know, as much as we'd like to have that that mindset, it's just really not possible. And there are really four things that drive that. Four things that kind of come up that are problems when it comes to marriages. You know, one of them is obviously ongoing active affairs where somebody is not wanting to stop. The other one would be an ongoing or active addiction where someone's not willing to get a treatment for. And of course, we're, you know, dealing with issues of domestic violence and abuse. And mm-hmm. that's a tough one to have anybody work through.
Yeah.
In fact, it's almost impossible to work with somebody that's, you know, is in a counseling perspective that's not in a safe environment. And the other one, the last one, sadly, would be a significant mental disorder. Somebody that has, you know, bipolar, dealing with some form of narcissism or something that's really significant. Now, all these oftentimes can be worked with, but those are tough ones. So, no, not every marriage can be saved.
Right. But you were telling me before that, interestingly enough, that if you have a couple that come in and they really want to save the marriage, but they have one or more affairs in the past, that those sometimes can be the best successes, that people can actually recover from relationships that have had affairs, and they can actually make the relationship stronger than it ever was.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I tell couples when they come in, is that, things that have been like an affair, people can oftentimes recover very well. The idea, though, is they've got to look at placing the marriage in a condition that was better than it ever was before. If that's not their goal, if they just want to try to patch things up and keep going forward, they're probably going to run into the problem again.
Right. Well, and I can see where having an active addiction would be a real problem with trying to save a marriage, because that's whatever the addiction happens to be, it's almost like an affair. It's like they're having an affair with whatever that drug is.
Yes.
And if it's something that's easily available, the spouse cannot compete.
Right.
So, and I love that you mentioned the idea of abuse being something significant, that you can't heal a relationship if people are not physically safe or even emotionally safe. And I know when it comes to abuse, one of the things we have is that we have to really understand what, like a verbal abuse, there's different levels of that. But I've had people say, oh, well, my husband disagrees with me, or my wife nags me.
Right.
And they consider that abuse. And when it comes to abuse, where do you have a definition, or do you have something that you look for, or do you say, how does somebody know the fine line of abuse between a husband and wife? What do you look for?
That is oftentimes a very tough thing to look at, because what one person considers abuse, somebody else is just, it's just normal communication. It's like the typical thing you get in counseling. Well, someone will say, well, they just keep yelling at me. And it's like, well, he's just talking. And so you'll actually be sitting in a room talking with a couple, and the wife or the husband will say, why are you yelling? And there might be intensity in their voice, but it's not necessarily yelling. And so you have to say, okay, well, what is it about that makes that so damaging to you? But ultimately, you've got to have a safe environment in order to move forward. And that's what we really try to establish is safety,
right.
the ability to be able to do counseling.
And some people may be more sensitive. If somebody grew up in a household where somebody did a lot of yelling and name calling, and then they may be more sensitive. So somebody else might not call it that abuse, and somebody else would. And
yes.
That's something your partner wants to know too, because if you've got a good partner that really does care about you, then they're not going to want you to feel like they're being abused.
Well, absolutely right. And if they understand that, they oftentimes can modify their behavior so that that's not the case. And
right.
That's what we try to get people to do.
Right.
Right.
Those are good points. Those are very good distinctions.
Absolutely.
The four things that we're talking about, what makes it harder to save a marriage, are having some sort of ongoing affair, an active addiction, abuse, or some sort of significant mental disorder.
That's correct.
Okay. So what about the people that do decide to stick it out? What happens to them? Are they happier? Does it work?
Well, it's interesting that they've done some studies on this, and they've actually determined that people that are in an unhappy marriage currently but stick it out are happier within 5 years. And what that really, I think, speaks to is this idea that conflict is not necessarily always a bad thing. Conflict can bring about change and bring about growth. And people that make it through, they actually are happier because they've grown. They've grown as people. They've grown within the relationship, and they're able to look at things differently and just progress and just deal with life.
And maybe not take things as personal, or maybe the growth they had, they can apply to the next issue that comes up and the next issue that comes up.
Exactly right. And they learn each other. That's the
mm-hmm.
whole thing, is that it's the idea about, relationships are about relating. And the moment you stop relating, you start having problems. And that's what I think that they learn to relate to one another.
Right. So relationships are about relating.
That's correct.
And the moment that you stop relating, you start having problems. That's like a tweetable kind of thing.
Yeah, it is.
We'll have to tweet that. We'll have to make a little. I'll have to make a meme for my Cherished Wives Facebook page or something. Thank you for that.
Yes, yeah. My clients get tired of me saying that.
Do they?
Yeah.
They probably hear you in their heads like, oh my gosh,
they
Joel's saying relationships are about relating.
I'm not relating.
Oh my gosh.
Am I relating? How am I relating?
Yes. They're like,
exactly.
Joel, get out of my head. Okay. So what about the people that don't stick it out? The people that actually get divorced. Are they happier? I mean, it's like life all kumbaya after they get divorced.
Well, you know, that's another thing. I do love research because research is one of those things that you can unpack some of these big, you know, bigger questions in life. And mm-hmm. and one of these is, are people happier? Because people often they get divorced because they're not happy. I don't know anybody that gets divorced because they're happy. They get divorced because they're not happy. But sadly, 50% are no happier after the divorce and wish they had done more to save it oftentimes. And that's a startling number when you think about, you know, what that means.
So 50% of the people that divorce, our research says they are not happier and they wish they had done more to save the marriage or they regret the divorce.
Right. Not only are they not happier, oftentimes they are worse off.
Wow, that's startling because, you know, people, they get a divorce because there's some sort of unhappiness or something not going well. And the divorce is, I'm having this happen so that I can be happier. I want things to be better.
Sure.
You don't get, like you said, you don't get divorced when things are good. You're getting divorced because you think that there's going to be something better on the other end. And statistics suggest that's just not the case.
Right. And again, there are people that do better after divorce, but there's a large number that are not. So I'm not saying that everybody that divorces is going to be worse off,
right,
or that they're going to be unhappy. But when you have 50% that are thinking that they're not going to be in that
right,
category, and yet they find themselves that they are, it's, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we want to make sure people, you know for sure what they're going to do before they do it.
Right. You know? So in a minute, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how do people really know. But can you help us understand why aren't people happier? They got a divorce thinking they'd be happier, but why aren't they happier? What are the issues that are going on that are making it so that they're not happier now?
Well, sadly, the biggest problem people face is the things that they did not know they didn't know, the things they weren't prepared for. People oftentimes are in a state of, very elevated negative emotions, and they just look at this marriage as has been the sole factor of why they're not happy. And so they just want that to stop. And so they go for that option thinking that that's going to solve their problems. And they just haven't really stepped back far enough to look at how many changes, how many things in their life are going to actually be impacted. And the majority of these people are in their 30s. I mean, that's the when you look at the statistics about who's getting divorced, you know, the longer you're in your marriage, and the older you get, statistically, your numbers drop drastically as far as those people that are divorcing. So we're talking about oftentimes people that have families.
And by families, you mean children.
Children.
So you've got people who have got children. And they're not just children. They're children who are probably in grade school. They're elementary, junior high. And this is a huge change for them.
Right. Yeah.
And so let me ask you a couple of questions here. When I know that there are statistics that say some of the top reasons that people divorce have to do with money. They have to do with child raising, co-parenting issues.
Sure.
They have to do with in-laws. So those things don't just go away.
No, they don't. And sadly, people think that the conflict and the fighting will come to an end, and it just starts. It starts at a much larger level, because now this person that you were living with, that you were even if things were not going well, you were still talking with them. Now they're living in a different home, and you've got, you know, you're further, you know, separated, and that relating that we just talked about is not happening at any level. You're sending texts, and you know, when you send texts, oftentimes they can be
misinterpreted.
You can pour all kinds of emotions in, negatively or positively, depending on how you're looking at a text. And
but that doesn't mean that they interpreted it the same way you sent it out.
That's exactly right. So the fighting oftentimes doesn't stop; it just goes on. Now we've got issues with custody. You got issues with visitation. So there's plenty of opportunity for conflict to continue. And so the biggest thing is that it doesn't stop.
So let me talk about that for a second. So fighting doesn't stop arguments, disagreements, and problems, the idea of parenting and things like that. So you now have a whole new bag of problems. You now have custody issues. You've got visitation schedules. So you've got...
Right.
But you know what? I think one of the things interesting here is a lot of times people think it's going to be all better because what you have is usually some sort of court order that says, here's what you guys are supposed to do. Here's how you behave.
Right.
Does that work?
But the sad thing about a court order, well, sure, if everybody follows it. But the problem is if somebody doesn't follow it, then how do you have to enforce it? The only way you can really enforce it is to drag somebody back to court. You know,
that's expensive.
It is expensive, especially, you know, if you have attorneys and all that. And so, you know, even though you have a court order that says that you're going to have, you know, your child back at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, and if you don't do that, then, you know, your options are become very limited.
Well, and if you have a contentious relationship, I could see where if the child's supposed to be back at 5 o'clock on Saturday, that you might have a parent just return them at 5:30 just to be difficult.
Sure. Yeah. And then, you know, at some point you can get to the point where you have to have civil standbys involved and you know, it just gets very, you know, if somebody wants to be difficult and the sad thing about divorce is that people just oftentimes aren't able to get beyond it. And so they use it as an opportunity to anytime they can to kind of, you know,
Be more difficult
to the spouse, you know, especially if the one person didn't want the divorce, you know.
Right.
So,
well, and that's not uncommon that one person doesn't want the divorce and the other kind of does. So you mentioned like the custody issues and visitation schedules. So, you know, give us maybe an example or two of some of the things besides people returning their kids late, like with custody things, like somebody returns their kid. How does that affect the kids? Kids, they're pretty resilient, but at the same time, does that mean that there's going to be problems with the kids and how the kids behave? Or they're going to pick up on that tension, right?
Of course. And you're basically, you know, the child, the children are half the mom, half the father. And so they identify with both parties. They want both parties to love them, both sides. And so they feel like they're having to choose. And they oftentimes, you know, this period of adjusting between one environment to the other environment is you know, very confusing for, and especially if you have young children.
They can act up.
Yeah, the older they get, you know, if you're talking about 15-year-olds, it's a little different. If you're talking about a 3-year-old or 5-year-old, it's very confusing for them.
And they'll pick up on the stress from
absolutely.
The parents. Absolutely. So that brings me to the topic of understanding, like, co-parenting, because most likely those parents are going to remarry. And if they're remarrying at an older age, they're going to be remarrying at a point where there's probably going to be a blended family situation. So
exactly.
Co-parenting is going to be, it's already difficult, but now we've got blended family issues. Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Well, you know, it's interesting that they say currently they're running about 70% of families that are blended families now.
Whoa, wait a minute. 70% of families,
yes.
And by families, we don't just mean people married. We mean people that have children.
Yes.
Are blended families. So
blended
we've
families.
Got kids that are from different parents.
Yes.
Living in the same household or at least part-time. So 70%.
Right.
Okay.
And growing up, you know, we watched the Brady Bunch. That was and it all looked like everything was easy.
And happy and wonderful.
And, you know, never had a problem. And the reality is it doesn't really work that well.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different things when you start looking at co-parenting with a blended family, because, you know, when you were in an intact family, you had a kind of a 50-50 opportunity to have some input. Now you've got generally people, you know, they remarry, and so your ability to affect change in that relationship with those children drastically reduces. Sometimes you're down to less than 25% of actual time and input mm-hmm. that you have to be able to affect change. And so if you were having control issues and wanting to have things ran a certain way within your home, now you're finding out that, man, I've got less
yeah.
room on the board. I've got less ability to make change in my child's life.
Yeah.
And the thing that other people don't realize is that you're going to have somebody else raising your children. You're going to have a spouse, this new spouse, and they've got their children that they're bringing into the relationship, and there's just a whole lot of dynamics that people don't actually, you know, mm-hmm. think through.
Well, and I think at that point in time, you look at some of like the family rules, and I know when you just have an intact family and a family that's running well, kids know, like, which parent you can go to for this, which parent you can go to for that, even in a happy, everything is sure. going well family.
Absolutely.
So if you've now got a divorced family and you've got blended families, I can only imagine the set of rules on candy or dessert or dinner or anything like that, okay? So I could see all sorts of rules being a problem there.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so let me ask you about something else. And we had spoken about this before, and I want to make sure that people get a chance to understand this. Because I know that you have like a dozen of these things that you go over with people. When people are coming in and they're considering divorce, one of the things you do, you say, let's sit down and look at these dozen things that you probably don't know that
right.
you don't know.
Yeah, there's more here than we can really go through.
Oh, absolutely. We'll have to have you on for another show. But one of the other things that I think is really significant that people probably don't get is the idea of shared history.
Right.
And you lose a shared history. And you were telling me before, it's things like, you think, oh, remember when we did this? Then you go, whoa, I didn't really do that with this mate. Or we had this habit or this pattern. And you're like, oh, that's not with this mate. And you have a loss of almost social capital
right.
and shared memories.
Because even in a bad marriage, there are times where there are good times.
You
know, there's rarely a situation where you've got everything's bad. And so they, mm-hmm. they end up losing the fact that there were good things and those memories are shared and they're gone.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's something that people don't realize. They want the pain to stop, but there were good things that they're going to lose.
Absolutely.
So, and I know we can't get through all 12 of these, but, and again, we'll have you on again, but I want to talk about this. First of all, let me ask you, does counseling really help?
It can help. And it can help on a couple factors. And what we really look for is people that, are looking, if they have a desire and a commitment for both individuals to want to fix a marriage. That's really the main thing we need. And the other thing we need is both individuals need to believe that the other has good intentions towards them, and they're not, specifically out looking to do them in. If you have those two things, you've got room left on the board.
Okay, so if you're both committed and you both believe the other person has your best interest at heart, then you've got some moves on the board.
Yes.
Okay. So what we also have here when we look at this is I want to point out something you had mentioned to me before, is that oftentimes you have something called mixed agenda couples. And when you have a mixed agenda couple, then that's when you do something called discernment counseling. And we've got just a couple minutes left. Can you just give us a brief overview of what discernment counseling is all about?
Well, discernment counseling, as you said, is really about couples that have got a mixed agenda, one leaning in, one leaning out. If both people want to save the marriage, it's easy to work on. If both want out of the marriage and they don't have any desire, it's different. But, discernment counseling is really about trying to come up with a clarity and confidence to either do one of three things. Either do nothing and hope things get better on their own, commit to a period of counseling, which I normally recommend 60 to 90 days, or separate, file for divorce. That's
dissolve
really,
it.
And that's what you're looking for. And that's where we do the deep dive into these facts and get people up to speed.
Okay. So it's not couples counseling where you're trying to save the marriage. It's counseling where you're trying to discern the next best step.
Yes.
Do we let it ride and see where we go? Do we let go of it, or do we dissolve it? Do we fight for it? Okay. You had said something really interesting to me a while ago where you said that people ask, how long do I fight for my marriage? And your answer is?
Well, I always say as long as it takes.
As long as it takes. And I love that. For how long do you fight? And there is a point where, yeah, we've spoke about it, not all marriages can be saved. And I think that that's an important thing. I want to tell everybody that Joel has very graciously offered up this this guide that he has on discernment counseling. If you or someone you know is seriously headed down that road towards a divorce, I want to encourage you to get his report on discernment counseling. It talks about the questions they ask and what's going on. And even if you're not headed down the road but you're having problems, seriously, check out this report. You're going to go to his website, mendedlife.com, and there's the free guide. There's a little blurb off to the side. You're going to just have to get it in email. And
it's a great resource just to have, even if you're not in a troubled relationship.
And for somebody else.
That's right, because you can have it, and it's a PDF. You can download it and just have it on file.
Yeah. So
if you're somebody in ministry
Oh, that's a good point. Somebody in ministry. So even if you get it for somebody else that you know that deals with marriages that are having a tough time, maybe a divorce care group or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay. So again, that's mendedlife.com. It's a free guide, a free resource. He also has a newsletter, a blog. There's all sorts of articles and things like that. And so if you want to get in contact with Joel, go to mendedlife.com. That's mendedlife.com. And I want to say thanks again, Joel. Joel Walton with mendedlife.com for being here today and sharing this really valuable information of what we don't know that we don't know. It's been helpful to me to be able to help my clients.
And thanks
for
having me.
So I look forward to having you again on the show in the future. Take care, everyone, and we'll see
you
next week.
Thank you for listening to Cherished Women, where Kimberly Walton tackles issues facing today's Christian women. If you'd like to connect with Kimberly or you're interested in in-love approach or mentoring, visit CherishedWives.com. You'll find insightful blogs and videos, inspirational classes, and an invite to sign up for a free monthly newsletter. While there, look for the link to the Cherished Wives Facebook page to join their community of sharing insights and wisdom for Cherished Women. If you have a topic on your heart that you'd like to suggest for a show, reach out and let them know at their Let's Connect page at CherishedWives.com. Until next time, remember the wisdom of Ephesians 4:2. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. CherishedWives.com.